Hi, welcome to episode 2 of Engaging with Education, Student Insights. I'm Shayna Scudero, and today we'll be talking all about being an LGBTQ student in college. From struggles to resources to areas for improvement, we'll learn more about how one part of your identity can largely impact your experience in higher education institutions. Joining me throughout this episode is my guest, Grian Weisner, a senior secondary English education major and English minor working for UConn's Rainbow Center as a team lead and coordinator for the center's family mentoring program. He's also the president of De Colores Collective, a student-run queer and Latin organization on campus. Starting a little off topic, but when I moved all the way from a little red dot called Singapore and started attending high school in America, I vividly remember the many awkward introductions I exchanged with students and teachers. It always goes something like, "Hi, I'm actually no, I go by Shane. He's just my legal name, you know?" After having lived in quite a conservative country for most of my life, I wasn't used to the freedom given to students to use their preferred name and pronouns and actually have that respected. Over time, of course, I gradually got more used to being able to call myself Shane without whispering my dead name like a secret I felt obligated to share with everyone. And I think that sense of comfort and confidence to be my authentic self helped me in the transition from high school to college. I had chosen a university pretty accepting and accommodating towards queer students, so it wasn't much of a concern to be open about my identity on campus. While I've been in quite the fortunate position, not every queer student can say the same. In a 2017 article from the Journal of Gay and Lesbian Social Services, queer college students interviewed had dealt with varying levels of discrimination. Physical aggression, verbal abuse, perpetuating and joking about stereotypes, and silent judgment through stares and other negative body language. Discrimination not only came from non-queer students, but from within the LGBTQ community too. Some queer folks would create divides within the community to look down upon those they perceived to be too gay, in terms of mannerisms and style, or even push heteronormative assumptions onto certain queer identities. Interviewees also shared feeling alone if they believed they didn't fit within the supposed norms of the queer community. Despite trying to reach out to fellow queer folks in groups on campus for support, they didn't feel very welcome, which negatively impacted their academic performance. When I asked Grian about some other struggles queer students may experience, he also brought up an interesting point regarding where students may have originally come from prior to college.
It really depends on where you come from, at least personally to me. Like, it could be easier for you if you lived in Northeast rather than someone who, like, lived in the South.
Yeah.
Coming to college, it could be two completely different environments. Some people had the privilege of growing up in the Northeast where, like, life is kind of more accepting, you know, living in, like, Connecticut, like, a blue state, whereas people who might become from, like, you know, like, I don't know, New Mexico, Texas, Georgia, Alabama might come to this and might think it's a safe haven. They might feel amazing to be themselves. They might have this sense of pride in themselves. So, it kind of depends on, personally, where you come from, but in general, just college is just a big melting pot of everything. It's a big salad bowl.
Because like I was from Massachusetts before coming here, and like it feels the same. People are like pretty accepting and stuff, so
no, that makes sense. Yeah. Like I came from Texas, so obviously my view is different.
Yeah.
So which is why I say this about that. But like, you know, where I'm from, like, you know, you don't talk about being queer, you don't talk about being Mexican, you just kinda like you just chill, do your thing, and stay out. But, like, coming here, I'm like, oh, my God, I can, like, be proud of who I am, and no one's gonna, like, shoot me. It's great. So, I love this.
As we continued discussing, however, we got to the topic of intersecting identities and how that can come into play during the college experience.
I think it's just a combination of people's, like, internalized biases and stereotypes, and it just comes kind of into a new level. I don't think people understand the term of intersectionality that much, which I don't blame them. It's not really taught in schools, and it's just now recently being taught. But usually when you tell someone, like, hey, like, in my case, like, hey, I'm Mexican, or hey, I'm, like, queer, they view it very linear. It's nothing that kind of correlates with each other.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, you know, if you're Mexican, you're illegal. What if you're queer, then, you know, what's another stereotype about being queer? For me, being trans, they ask me about what's in my pants. It's never anything that's, like, kind of combining, like, oh, what's it like being, like, a Mexican queer person, but rather it's like, oh, like, well, you're Mexican and you're queer. And it, I don't know. It's just people don't really quite understand, and they don't want to understand. It's a lot of misinformation that's being spread, and people just don't want to learn.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Because obviously, like, everything's more, you know, education-based. You ask questions about things you don't know, and then you learn. You do that with every culture, no matter if you're, you know, QT BIPOC or not. Mm-hmm, it's all about learning, and people just don't want to learn. So it just makes it harder for people who exist within these identities to be themselves with people who are not willing to put in the effort to understand someone's perspective.
This reminded me of an article from the 65th volume of the Journal of College Student Development, where one college student shared how queer resources did not feel as accessible due to his intersecting identities and status as DACA, thus needing to rely more on families for support. However, being around cultural influences that encourage a more heteronormative mindset and lifestyle made them develop insecurities and struggle to develop relationships with others on campus, thus hindering identity development. Additionally, in a similar vein to what Grian said, some families may not understand how intersecting identities can coexist, so they prioritize maintaining pride in cultural identity over anything else, in turn discouraging expressing the queer aspect of their identity. But over time, as society has grown more accepting, so have colleges, and thus queer resources and support have been made more accessible to students. For instance, Grian highly advocates for the queer spaces and cultural centers available to students at UConn.
So I always tell this to everyone. I love the cultural centers. Like, obviously, mm-hmm. I work at the Rainbow Center, and I like it here. I spend time here no matter what. But even just any cultural center in general, like, I particularly don't identify with the Women's Center, but I go there frequently. Mm-hmm. I love going there. I love the people who work there. I go to Perlack all the time. It's just a nice, comfortable space to go into, and you're not going to be judged for anything. People are just going to open their arms and accept you no matter what. And obviously, all the directors here are wonderful. They're great, great, great people, and they'll help you no matter what.
However, according to a scoping review from the International Journal of Inclusive Education, some universities have made efforts to acknowledge other marginalized identities within the queer community, such as indigenous communities, but they often do not consider the complexity and unique experiences of such intersecting identities. In our interview, Grian also elaborates more on this.
It kind of depends. Honestly, I can't really blame the resources. There are some things, like, I personally don't like Shaw. That's just me. I tried going there for something and they just would not help me. They would not hear me out. They wouldn't do these things for me personally. But then I found out it's more the line of who helped me rather than the actual, like, resource itself. Unfortunately, there are not many resources catered to, like, queer people of color.
Yeah.
It's, I don't know why there isn't, but there isn't. The only thing I can recommend for, like, a resource like that is, like, you know, clubs and organizations. Mm-hmm. So we have, like, BQSA, we have QAA, and we have Decolotes, which are the top three QT BIPOC orgs on campus. And, you know, obviously going to them, you're going to meet other people of color who are also queer, and they can help you personally, but there are not, like, unfortunately, things designed for queer people of color. Mm-hmm. But it's just, I don't know. Yeah.
It's all very, like, student.
It's all very student-run, so I'm just like, it's, obviously you can find certain people, like, I highly recommend talking to any, like, director or, like, you know, Kelsey, the director of Rainbow Center, just knock on the door and be like, hi, and they're going to welcome me with open arms. They're helping me do my name change stuff.
Oh, that's great.
So they're wonderful. Mm-hmm. And same with the other directors, too. They're great.
There's always more work to be done to make such resources easily accessible to students, though. Some queer students of UConn have come together to create a document sharing helpful resources and people to turn to.
My coworker actually worked on in maybe, like, a 12-page document of resources that were fact-checked by queer people and people of color. It's basically everything that you could ever want in a resource document, and everything is, you know, checked by people who went there. There's certain people mentioned here, like, hey, if you're gonna go to, like, this therapy thing, request this person because they're very affirmative, et cetera, et cetera. So it's good information to have, but that never would have happened unless someone put the effort and initiative to do the research. Mm-hmm. Which is really unfortunate. I wish it was already a thing, you know, just that UConn did. They have the resource, they're just not available, like, openly. You need to do some digging, which is very unfortunate. Yeah. But they're there. They're
You just gotta look for them.
You gotta find the keywords and you look for it.
But, I mean, yeah, it's cool that there are, like, people on campus that are taking initiative and, like, helping other people find it. If the resource is there, you want people to use it.
No, exactly. So I just want people to be happy and healthy. The guy who did this, his name's Nathan, amazing, amazing, amazing person. So I'm glad he put the effort to do this. And we're trying to continue it and trying to make it more mainstream so everyone has access to it.
At the end of the day, the very least I implore you all to do is to please be kind. Please be respectful to queer folks on campus and all queer folks in general. Like Grian said, some folks view college as a safe haven for them to live as their authentic self and be supported for it. A very special thanks once again to Grian Weisner for helping me out with this episode. His input regarding queer BIPOC students' experiences was very insightful and much appreciated. In the next episode of Engaging with Education, Ian Duncan will be discussing how education can be made more entertaining and, well, engaging.